Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podco.co at podgo.co. Now let's kick off the show. John and James, let's get at it.
John, it's James. Warm up the tires and turn up the engine because it's time to start the Outlap F1 podcast. From the Sports Talk Garage Network studio in Chicago to the best fans from around the world, join us every week for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 35 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. I'm Andy. I have John with me for his first preview episode in a bit. John, how we doing?
Good, man. Happy to be back in the studio again for another night. So, fortunately, James couldn't join us tonight, so we don't have the whole crew together. But, yeah, I'm glad to be back, man. I'm excited about this race. It's a hell of a track. At least it should put on some good racing. So, I'm glad to be here, man.
Good, good. As always, you can find our lovely little show at on Twitter, Instagram, and now Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And you can check out our beautiful website at www.outlapf1.com, where, as a reminder, you can check out our blog by the incredibly talented Sophie Middleton, who you can find on Twitter at MotorsportSoph. And as always, if you feel like giving a penny, a dime, a dollar, maybe $2, you can check out our Support the Pod page. We would be most appreciative of anything you can spare. If you can't spare any money, hey, we understand Christmas is coming. Feel free to give us a five-star review. That's just about as good as anything for us. And again, if you're listening to us and you're not quite sure what we're talking about, feel free to check out our F1 for Beginners episode. That's our Season 2, Episode 10, where we take you soup to nuts, everything and anything we can think of about F1 to try to explain it to you so that you are more intelligent than the fan next to you.
And Andy, you mentioned Christmas, and you know, with that coming up and or the holidays. Yeah, obviously, if you can't support the show, you got things going on right now. We completely understand it's a crazy year right now. But hey, you know, another way you can support the show and, you know, assist yourself in the holiday shopping is with our partnership with Manscaped. So, you know, they've got a variety of products that we can talk about later. But I mean, if you need a Christmas gift or holiday gift, a Hanukkah gift, whatever the case may be, and you want to help support our show in the same time, we got a win-win. So definitely check out our partnership with Manscaped with Outlap, code Outlap. You get 20% off plus free shipping on that. So again, it's a win-win for both of us. So check that out.
Yeah, it's a great deal. And we are happy, as always, to bring it to you. John, we're going to get into some news before we hop into our track facts and everything else. First item on our agenda tonight is we have a 2021 provisional calendar. Got a lot of the tracks we're used to necessarily going back to, and a couple surprises. Just kind of, if I can pull it up here. So the season is set to start 21st of March back in Australia. From then we head to Bahrain, we go to China, we have a TBC slot. That looks like where Vietnam would have been. Then we go to Spain, back to Monaco, Azerbaijan, Canada, France, yeah, Austria, the UK, Hungary. Then we have our summer break. The second half of the season kicks off with Spa as normal. The Zandvoort circuit will make its debut on 5 September. Then we go to Italy with Monza. The 26th of September sees us going to Sochi, Russia. 3 October sees us going back to Singapore, followed by Japan. Then bellwether for us here in the U.S., Circuit of the Americas back on the calendar, 24 October. Mark your calendars if you are interested in going. Looks like tickets are going to be on, will be available. I've already gotten my email that says that they'll stand by. We're sending you your invoice soon.
Yeah, I got mine about putting my deposit down. So it's game on, man, for there, for USA.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be full crowd. Obviously, we've had some good COVID news come out in the past week, believe it or not, with the vaccine potential. So looks like with a slot being later on in the calendar, it looks like it's going to be good for us. Then after U.S., we go to Mexico, followed by Brazil at Sao Paulo. Interlagos, not the Rio de Janeiro circuit, as was rumored. New race on the calendar, Saudi Arabia is going to be a night race in the city of Jeddah. Following that will be the season finale, as is tradition, on 5 December with Abu Dhabi. So we have 23 potential races. It's going to be a full calendar. John, any initial thoughts on the scheduling?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that, you know, I'm looking through there and, you know, I'm a massive fan of night races. So it looks like we're getting, what, 1, 2, 3, basically 4 night races in next year, which I'm stoked about. And then it gives me hope for next year, because this feels like basically a normal Formula One calendar. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of races, which we'll talk about in a second. But, I mean, it feels a little bit like normal, and I think that's kind of something that we've all really, really wanted to see. So, I mean, that's the big standout. Obviously, I'm stoked as hell about, you know, COTA being back on there, like we just mentioned. Another thing that came out this week about COTA is that for the first time ever, I believe, we're actually going to get a Formula 3 race there. Yep. And correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, is this going to be one of those weekends where they have, like, the triple races over the weekend?
Yes. Yes, that's actually, it's another news story, but we can talk about it right now. The F2 and F3 have kind of redone their schedules, where we used to see a mix of both F2 and F3 races on a given weekend. Any weekend that has one of them is going to have either or as opposed to and going forward. So instead of 2 races per weekend, you're going to get 3 races per weekend. Like I said, either it's going to be an F2 or an F3, but you're not going to get both. It's done to kind of limit the travel. Mainly F2 and F3 want to kind of stay in Europe and not do a whole ton of traveling. But it's interesting that, like you said, F3 is going to come over to Circuit of the Americas, and that's going to be their season finale. And if it's anything like this past F3 season, where the season finale came down to 3 drivers going for a championship in Italy, that's going to be one heck of an epic weekend going back and forth potentially. And we may also be able to see not one, but 2 American drivers. I'm not necessarily sure if Logan Sargeant is moving up to F2, but if he's not, he'll probably be an F3. And there's also an American coming out of the Toyota Racing Series last year who was an F3 as well, Cameron Das. So that's 2 homeboys that we're going to be able to get to cheer on, hopefully going for a championship at COTA next year.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, the only time I've ever gotten to see the lower, like, junior Formula Series is when I was in Monza, because typically, you know, they never fly over the pond, our side, our neck of the woods. So I'm stoked as hell about the opportunity to see them. The F2 and F3 racing is incredible, just because they're, you know, spec cars essentially. You know, you don't have all the insane aero packages that you see in Formula One. So the cars are really, really close together. They have a hell of a lot of hard battling, and I think that track is really going to suit them. And hey, the fact that we get to see them 3 times for the weekend, I mean, the more the merrier. Hell yeah. I wish there was kind of some weekends where we got to see Formula One, you know, maybe like that. But so I'm really, really, really stoked about that as well. And then the big thing for me that kind of stands out is that TBC. I mean, we talked about Vietnam. There's been a ton of money and ton of work being done on that Vietnam track, and then suddenly it's not on the calendar. Andy, I mean, what's going on there?
You know, that's a bit of a shocker. It seems from what I've read on it, they are concerned, at least there's a lot of, obviously it's a street circuit, so you're dealing with a lot of not only state government at the country level, but local government at the city level. There's a lot of worry because their COVID-19 numbers are relatively low in that part of the world right now. Obviously we're seeing the big spike in Europe. We're seeing a big spike in this country right now. they are concerned that potentially having an F1 race that early on in the calendar would potentially bring in some COVID with it, even with all of the protocols and everything that F1 does. So it looks like for right now, it's Vietnam doesn't necessarily want to be on the calendar. So it's going to kind of remain to be seen what happens with that. The cheap answer is obviously it could just remain in an unfilled spot and we just don't go racing. But as we've seen, at least with this year, it seems like Formula One and Liberty have been able to fill in gaps in calendars where they've had them before. So it's open for right now. And for all we know, it could get confirmed later on down the line. This is not the first time we've seen a TBC spot, you know, that gets filled with a race that where we would expect it to be. I can remember were called TBC and not necessarily final on the first blush of calendar. So where we could go, I think what would make sense, at least if they're going to that part of the world, there is that Malaysia circuit that's sitting out there. That would be an interesting race. I would love to see that come back. It always kind of annoyed me. The question with that track is, does it want Formula One? It loves its MotoGP, but they haven't been able to draw necessarily as much as they'd like for Formula One. But who knows? You know, maybe a couple years absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to my buddy Obi in Chicago. He grew up in Nigeria and went to, I believe, every single Malaysian Formula One race that they had until, you know, obviously they finally, you know, dropped off the calendar. So I know hell of a good memories from him. I would love, love, love to see these modern day cars on that track. I think that would be a beautiful thing to see, some really, really tight and kind of awkward corners on there. And I think it'd be cool as hell to see what these guys can do on there. So yeah, when I saw that, Malaysia was the first thing. You and I must be on the same wavelength there. Great line, second light, because that's exactly the first thing that popped in my head. Been a lot of fun races there, some controversy races as well. But yeah, that would be a hell of a good spot to go to.
Yeah, and the topography of that track really lends itself really well, I think, even to these wider cars, simply because it's such a wide track. You can make moves, counter moves. There's corners that have good camber to it, and then there's that off camber corner right before the start finish line that all the drivers tend to hate, but it always makes for some interesting passing opportunities. So I'd love to see it, but again, you know, we'll keep our eyes on it, whether or not it actually comes to fruition, or whether that spot, the worst thing to me would be to have that spot just go unfilled. But I understand 23 races, it's a lot. And that kind of leads us into our next story right away. How would you expect teams to attack a 23 race calendar? Mercedes has put out a story saying that they're going to consider doing some sort of a rotation.
Yeah, I think this makes sense. I mean, so Chris Medlin tweeted out earlier this week just for some perspective, and he said, a perspective on how tough the schedule will get for teams. Unique challenge of 2020 meant 9 races in 11 weeks this year, and that was tough. All in Europe at 6 different countries. Flip that now to 2021 just for comparison, and we've got 9 races in 12 weeks across 9 different countries in 4 different continents. So the travel schedule there is insane, and I think it makes sense. I mean, Mercedes has talked about doing this before, kind of having a, I don't want to call them an A, B, or A shift and a B shift, but essentially having two crews that are working pretty much simultaneously, but on, you know, for preparing for different races, just to keep their personnel, their men and women, fresh, and, you know, having, you know, the sharpest minds, you know, and things like that. So that way they can focus on certain tracks and not, you know, basically don't put all your eggs in one basket, spread and divide out and kind of divvy out the love across the team. And that way you hopefully, at least on paper, you would get the best of each person at those specific races, and, you know, versus having a massive team that's, the, you know, come race 14 has already wore the hell down. And now we've got, you know, 9 more races to go and a whole hell of a lot of travel. So a lot of the F1 mechanics and even media people for that matter talked about how grueling this year was from a travel standpoint. And, you know, I think, you know, James, you and I, we all kind of love those triple headers. But even for us as podcasters, when we have triple header after triple header after triple header, I mean, we even we get wore down and we're, you know, sitting in a studio with our feet propped up, not doing a whole lunch and nothing other than watching TV and taking good notes and talking about it. So I can only imagine, you know, the amount of flight time on there. I mean, Andy, do you think this makes, like, is it feasible? Is it, do you think it's actually going to play out in their hands?
I look at it from a couple different standpoints. You know, if we're getting back to normal, and it means we're basically looking at this in kind of a post-COVID environment, one of the things that this would mean would some of those jobs that unfortunately had to get cut due to COVID, I think would start to come back a little bit. You'd see teams do some hiring as opposed to some, you know, contracting, which is kind of what we've seen this year. So that I think in and of itself is a good thing. I would love to be able to, I think it also breeds a much more stable enterprise going on to have more than one crew capable of doing a car build and, you know, doing the pit stops and all that stuff. You probably would be able to groom your pit crew guys just in the same vein that you do your drivers. You know, you would be able to tap your reserves if somebody did happen to not be able to make a race, you know, if they had an injury or whatever would happen. It would be easier than to, you know, swap staff back in and out while doing that. So I think it does tend to make sense having some sort of a rotation, having maybe an A and a B crew or an A and a 1A crew type deal. A lot of the bigger teams, I know Ferrari, one of the ways that they train pit crew guys is, you know, when they do those show runs with the older cars, with the, you know, even the normally aspirated engines, that's who's taking care of those cars, are junior pit crew guys. So, you know, just as you have an academy for drivers, you have an academy for pit crew guys too. So, and women as well. So it definitely sounds like a good idea. I like the way that they would attack it. I would hope. Obviously, that's Mercedes, the most cash flush team right now at the moment. I would just hope that there would be enough in all these teams' operating budgets in order to fit that all in, because I think it'd be good.
Yeah, you brought up just the point that I was getting ready to say. Yeah, we're going into a budget cap next year, and correct me, is it $175 million?
Yeah, it's around there.
Some give or take, somewhere around that mark. I know it's been a while since we've kind of talked about a specific number, but that was my other question is, like, can they afford to have a duplicate effort on so many different positions? I mean, right now they've, you know, they're pretty much paying these people anyways. And, you know, if I'm sure there's other areas that they could cut corners at or try to trim the fat down to make it happen. I think if you're a bigger team and you can spend every single penny of your allotted budget, then yeah, you've got to take advantage of that, because, you know, that's just one step above, you know, your competition when it comes to, you know, your on-track competition. If you can financially beat them, you got to take advantage of it. So I think it's a smart move for the bigger teams to certainly do this. You know, but it's, you know, it's going to make life hell for Haas and Williams and Alpha and things like that. But, you know, certainly, you know, Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, Aston Martin, and, you know, and Renault, obviously, should have, you know, plenty of, you know, disposable income that they can take advantage of to make that happen.
Yeah. We'll have to see how, you know, does this become a strategy decision and a competitive edge, something interesting to take a look at as this next season kind of unfolds. So, you know, we'll keep our eyes on it. And, if we see trends, we'll do our best to try to point them out to you. One last question on the calendar. We haven't really talked about the race in Saudi Arabia. So this was kind of not a last minute ad. There was a lot of kind of talk about it kind of coming up. But any initial thoughts about the location? I kind of want to get into some of the politics of it in a little minute, but I'll let you take your first crack at it.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me, this one's tough for me. I mean, we're going to, you know, the oil-rich company or country that is Saudi Arabia. And I think that the location is, I could see both ways. I could see that, you know, this is a petrol driven motorsport series. It makes sense to be in a petroleum based giant country that is Saudi Arabia. But at the same time, it's interesting that, you know, there's been more and more of this push from F1, from the FIA in general, obviously, to go more green and to, you know, look at renewable energy and things like this. So it does kind of seem a little interesting that they would pick Saudi Arabia. Again, I'm really, really happy that there's a night race on there. You know, I've seen some possible renderings of track layouts and stuff, and I think it's going to be interesting. On the flip side, like you mentioned, there's certainly a political aspect and a social political aspect of Saudi Arabia that kind of makes you quite is sort of similar to, I mean, there's been issues in Azerbaijan, in Bahrain. I mean, so Formula One is certainly not a stranger to going to countries that don't have the best reputation for socio-political activities going on. So I guess I should not be surprised that they would choose Saudi Arabia, even despite, you know, their issues over there. But I don't know, man. There's a lot of wonderful places on Earth that you could pick a Formula One, race to go to. And I don't know what the fan base is going to be like over there, but I know there's going to be a bunch of rich, princes and things like that that are, I'm sure, spending, you know, tens of billions of dollars to get F1 there and to put Saudi Arabia, you know, from a media standpoint on the map. That's not something you see a whole lot of media coming out of there. So I think it's strategic on their part to kind of put their, smiling face to the global, you know, media out there that says, hey, like, Saudi Arabia is a good place. Come visit here. You know, whether that's the case or not, I don't know. But,
when I first saw it, I mean, the natural reaction was, you know, and I saw a lot of this on Twitter was, you know, you rake Liberty in Formula One for saying, well, we race as one as long as they pay for it, you know, type of deal. And there is definitely an aspect of that to this. The term that I've heard kind of thrown out there is what they call kind of, you know, countries will do what's called sports washing, which is we bring in a sport. And therefore, because now it's on TV and we can show it the best light, we can then enable ourselves to have better global standing. There's no doubt in my mind Saudi Arabia's reputation going into this event, their human rights record is atrocious. It's terrible. It's a very closed off country. It's got some laws that don't necessarily make sense to most of the Western world. But I also think at some point we have to bring certain parts of the world kind of into the fold, and we have to be the best, sometimes cleaner of that can be sunlight. You spot sunlight on the problem, you're going to then hopefully get some sort of resolution to it. So if you're putting the spotlight of F1 type media and everybody on a country like this, does that spur change in a positive way? That's something that can happen. I mean, in terms of the world in general being offended at going to a place like this, I mean, almost you have to kind of look at yourself a little bit, because we have Bahraini oil funds owning teams in F1. We go to Bahrain, which has a similarly bad human rights record. And even outside of F1, we're going to have a World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So, and that, if you followed any of that construction of those stadiums, that has a human rights record issue, you know, painted all over it. So, I mean, we're just going to have to kind of bite the bullet and kind of get used to it. But I do think it's the only way to get that kind of closed off part of the world to kind of move forward a little bit, even if it's small, even if it's incremental. It's better, I think, to have it than not.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, and looking at other sporting events that Saudi Arabia has had in recent, I mean, obviously there was Grand Prix, I think, back in the 70s, you know, that in Saudi Arabia. So this is certainly not a brand new thing to them. But in recent years, I mean, well, next year they're going to be hosting the very first stage of the Extreme E all electric, awful drive or off road drive racing competition, almost like a rally extreme, but all electric. The fact that they're having an all-electric racing series in Saudi Arabia, again, kind of interesting. But yep. they've had Formula E there. They've had Dakar rallies. They've had Italian Super Cups and competitions. They had Spanish Super Cup. They've had all kinds of things that have happened there. So I think, you know, that was a really interesting point that you just made. I hadn't really thought about that. But as far as, you know, shining a little bit of sunlight in a country that's been, you know, very closed off and has a lot of issues going on. It kind of reminds me of, you know, some areas where, you know, the Olympics have gone to. There's been a lot of countries where Olympics have been held that have pretty piss poor, you know, human rights, reputations as well. And there's been some good that's come out of, you know, the Olympics going to those countries and some bad, but at least on the good side, it has, like you just mentioned, it has kind of shed the light on some of these issues and gotten some global attention on some of these issues. And sometimes that's what you need to start driving some change, is to wake some people up or to show these countries as what they are. And then at that point, it kind of somewhat can force their hand into change and say, okay, listen, we really don't want, you know, to be viewed as this way. Let's start making some internal changes. So I think that's an excellent point that I hadn't thought of, Andy, that, you know, perhaps bringing an entire world audience into this country could bring some positive changes for its citizens and things of that nature. So good point there, Ben.
So the next story on our agenda tonight, kind of not a necessarily a great news story, but the acting director for Williams, Simon Roberts, unfortunately tested positive for COVID-19 and will miss the weekend. John, I think this is just going to be one of those things that we're going to have to deal with, you know, across the paddock. Just seems that, you know, it pops up and then they go away. Hopefully, again, we hope that he's all good and able to recover without any sort of issues or symptoms. But any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, Williams, it seems like, handled this appropriately, at least from everything I read, unlike, you know, the Racing Point Lance Stroll deal. So kind of the complete opposite of that. So he wasn't feeling 100%, I wasn't sure exactly what happened either. He wasn't feeling 100%, or he had a standardized COVID-19 test in relation to Formula One's rules. Either way, his original test came back negative, but then I guess his symptoms progressed a little bit. I think he's still feeling overall pretty well, but he started to feel a little bit more crummy. So they went and retested him, and at that point came back positive. So, you know, if there's any, I guess, a little bit of light on this story, is that at least, you know, they did the right thing there. They got the second test in early in the week, and he was able to, you know, start his quarantine process away from the team. But yes, he was slated to be, you know, from everything I read, was slated to be obviously at the track this weekend. I'm not sure at what point if he had traveled yet or not. But I'm glad that they did the right thing, got the second test in there, and caught this thing early. So, yeah, unfortunately, this is just something we're going to have to deal with, I think, for the foreseeable future. But, you know, there's a big difference. And how you handle things makes a hell of a lot of difference. Again, looking at you, Lance Stroll.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and we've talked about it on other shows, too. You know, I don't want to – I never want to see COVID itself becoming this, like – you know, scarlet letter type deal, like you did it and, you know, something wrong happened to you. Well, no, not necessarily, but you can't necessarily control that. But what can you control? How you respond to it when it comes. And you're absolutely right. This is exactly how, this is like textbook. This is how you handle a COVID protocol. And they were honest and open. He didn't get exposed to anybody. He didn't bring it into a paddock. It wasn't like he got stopped at the gate and, you know, there's just 40 other people that you now have to contact trace. It worked. The system worked. And I wish this gentleman all the best. You know, I've only got to see him in like one team principal's press conference. So, you know, I like what I've seen of him, and I know he's been around the team for a long time. So obviously all the best to him, and hopefully, you know, the spread stops there, and you know, we can kind of get on with the rest of the weekend, but this is how you handle it. Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So our last story in our bit of a rundown, we have a title potential deciding race. How can Lewis Hamilton win the title, John?
So long story short, he basically needs to have a bad day, but I'll quickly kind of go through the highlighted points here. Obviously Bottas is mathematically the only other contender in this equation here, and it's a long shot, but if Bottas wins the race and gets fastest lap, Hamilton cannot win the championship regardless of where he finishes. If Bottas wins the race but does not get the fastest lap, all Hamilton needs to do is finish second. If Bottas finishes second plus fastest lap, Hamilton just needs to be fourth. Bottas third plus fastest lap, Hamilton needs to be fifth. Bottas third, no fastest lap, Hamilton sixth, fourth, seventh, fifth, eighth, sixth plus fastest lap, ninth, sixth without fastest lap, tenth. So most likely, unless there's some kind of mechanical failure, you got to think that there's probably a pretty good mathematical chance that he's going to wrap up the title in Turkey. Really, if you're Bottas, the only thing you can be shooting for is a lights out. You need to start from the pole, and you need to be balls out to try to get that fastest lap as well. Because, you know, if Hamilton's on your butt and you don't get that fastest lap, or Max Verstappen clips you for that fastest lap on the last lap of the race, you know, that could be the title difference. If one person gets that fastest lap right there at the end and Bottas isn't pushing every single lap, that could be the title right there. And then, so, like I said, Hamilton will need to have a pretty bad day. It certainly isn't like some other of his championship clinchers where, you know, he only had to finish, you know, sixth or something like that, to do it. He does, you know, there is another factor there, and Bottas certainly does have a contributing factor in this championship outcome. But if you're Lewis Hamilton, you got to be thinking, okay, I got a pretty strong chance of tying the great Michael Schumacher on Sunday.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. He's going to have kind of a really, really off weekend in terms of Hamilton, and Bottas is going to have to be, you know, 100% on it, you know, basically from, you know, FP1 on in order to try to push this thing to another round. It has kind of seemed fait accompli, and now it's kind of interesting that the math has finally caught up with that. My guess is we probably see the title get decided, just based on the form that Lewis has been on. You know, he's got 92 wins and going for 93 now. So, you know, he's record breaker every time out. And, you know, what a better way to kind of to punctuate it with a win and just kind of let it go. And, you know, then we kind of we'd have three rounds where there really isn't anything to be decided at the top. I mean, that's not necessarily the best thing for the sport, but it just goes to show how dominant, you know, he's been this year and kind of, you know, just the fact that he's been on a completely other level.
Yeah, I mean, with the exception of, you know, a couple of races, I mean, he's been, even Hamilton haters like James have had to kind of tip their cap to the guy this year. He just seems to, there was people questioning his motivation and things like that coming into this year and, you know, how long, and we still don't exactly know how long he'll be in the sport. There was a little bit of, you know, rumblings out there like, oh, could he actually retire, you know, after this year, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, as far as at least for this year, motivation clearly is not lacking because he has just found a whole extra gear, it seems like, in that gearbox and has driven the wheels off that car.
Yeah, definitely. I like I said, I think we're going to see this be a title decider. And, you know, so keep your eyes peeled for it. It's always fun whenever you get into these kind of, you know, title permutations. And it'll be interesting to see what type of celebration they have planned. You know, we saw what they did with that really cool montage right when he surpassed Schumacher's all-time wins record. I know last year at COTA, they had the special parking space that they had painted that said, you know, reserved for the 2019 world champion. So, you know, if they do something similar to that, I hope they make it a little bit more creative than just doing a repeat of that. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, that montage is badass. If anyone has a tweet of that, I would love to kind of pin that on my personal profile. Last year I had kind of a short of just montage of just his championship winning scenario or races on my personal Twitter for most of this last year. So I would love to kind of have a montage of all the race wins. If anyone has it out there, please send that over my way. because that would be a keeper. I haven't seen one yet, but yeah, I'd love to get a hold of it. But and then, yeah, real quick, Andy, before we move on, again, we talked about Manscaped earlier. Just want to let you guys know, and we've mentioned it before, but Manscaped has just released the Weed Whacker. And guys, I know that we, especially during these quarantine times and things like this, we've all kind of, you know, we've grown out the facial hair and, you know, we're not really leaving the house. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not really spending a whole lot of time in front of the mirror. But I have a sneaking suspicion that if you were to go and turn on that light and go take a close up of your eyes or, you know, around your nose and your ears, things like that, you might have some weird things growing out of there. You might have those little ghost hairs, those little, you know, clear ones, or God only knows what you might have growing out of your face. So that's where the Weed Whacker comes in, guys. Again, just because you're not leaving the house doesn't mean you shouldn't be taking care of yourself. Certainly, if you have a significant other in the house, they definitely, I can speak on their behalf, they absolutely want you to take care of yourself. I'm sure that they do a great job of keeping, you know, themselves nice and tidy, and I'm sure they would expect that of you as well. So, you know, again, we've got the Weed Whacker. It's purposely made for nose and ear hair. This thing is incredible. It fits amazing in the hand. If you, you know, if you're looking at the perfect package, which includes their other products, they use the same chargers. This thing's got 9,000 RPMs on it. So if you're like me, I mean, RPMs, the more the merrier. This thing's a badass. More power. You know, I get some Tim Allen in my spirit there. But yeah, check that out, guys. Again, it's amazing product. This company has been so good to us. They really make a hell of a quality product. And, you know, if you're looking for a Christmas gift, they have shears out there. They have nail trimmers. They've got, you know, lotions. They've got kind of wipes to kind of keep yourself clean throughout the day. You know, there's all kinds of just men's grooming things that these guys specialize in. So definitely check them out. Do yourself a favor. And or if you're, you know, if you're looking for something for your significant other, whether you want to drop them a subtle hint or not, this is a great gift. So we really appreciate all your support. Use our code OUTLAP. It's OUTLAP, one word. You get 20% off, free shipping. They ship all over the freaking world. There's only, you know, pretty much all the major geographical locations they're shipping to now. So I know we have listeners all spread throughout the country and spread throughout the world. So definitely check them out. We would really appreciate it. And it just helps kind of build out our partnership with them. So yeah, definitely check that out.
So yeah, John, I mean, these are great products. And guys, don't you want to have the most absolute aero-efficient package that you can out there? Don't you want to be like Adrian Newey and just glide right in there? drag is a terrible thing. Stomp it out. Get these products. Get the free shipping. Get the 20% off. Now's the time to do it. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your significant others. It's great. So go check that out for sure. And
it's funny.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just say it's funny, Andy. I think we talked about this like weeks back. But another product that they have, I think we were joking. I don't remember if we were live when we were joking or not. But guys, we've all had that situation, like I had a few weeks back, where you kind of run out of that body wash, and you're kind of in the shower there, and the only thing around is your, you know, flowery smelling, scented, you know, significant other's body wash or shampoo or whatever the case may be. I had one of those situations very recently, actually. And thankfully, again, I immediately went on manscaped.com. I'm like, all right, they got to have a solution for this. I can't be running out. And sure enough, they've got products there. They've got subscription things that you can kind of, you know, auto ship it out to you. So it smells good. You feel like a man. You smell like a man again. That was my big thing. No offense to the fruit smells and the flower smells, but it wasn't quite my thing. I was looking for something a little bit different, and thankfully Manscaped delivered. Yeah, my wife's not making fun of me anymore, at least not for that particular thing. So, yeah, do yourself a favor. Check them out.
So we'll be back, and when we do, we're going to get into the Istanbul circuit and the Turkish Grand Prix. Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 35. Hard to believe we've done that many. Of the Outlap F1 Podcast, it's Andy. I'm along with John. And we are getting all primed up for the Turkish Grand Prix. As always, our track facts are brought to you by our good friends at Pirelli Motorsport. John, tell us about the circuit.
Yeah, so we are going to the Intercity Istanbul Park. Its location is, I'm going to butcher this, Tuzla, Turkey. Again, apologies for all our Turkish people out there. I'm assuming it's near Istanbul. Number of laps, we got 58 laps around this track, which comprises 3.316 miles or 5.338 kilometers for our European listeners. Track selection this year, this particular week, we are going with the three hardest compounds, C1, C2, and C3. Track characteristics, going back to the old days to try to get these numbers, we've got traction at a 4 out of 5, braking 3 out of 5, tire stress is a 5 out of 5. That's going to be interesting. Lateral load, a 4 out of 5. We don't know asphalt grip. We don't know asphalt abrasion right now because there has been so much time difference in the circuit there since we've last been there. And downforce is listed as a 4 out of 5. So we've got a wonderful recap coming up. And one of the things that's talked about is how many pit stops we had the last time we were at this track. So that tire stress being a 5 out of 5 might come in very much into play on Sunday. Lap record for this one is, James will hate this one, Sebastian Vettel at a 125.049 in 2011. Race lap record is the old Juan Pablo Montoya. Good old JPM on there. So 124.770. That was all the way back in 2005. That's pretty incredible. Most wins is Felipe Massa with 3. And then you've got Bottas, Hamilton, Vettel, and Kimi Raikkonen all with 1. For James will be happy about this last part. Most constructors wins, we got Ferrari at 3. No shocker there. Followed by McLaren at 2. So, Andy, what is the circuit like for these drivers?
So for a Herman Tilke design track, and a lot of times when we mention that his name, we sometimes going to go, oh boy, what are we going to get? But this is probably one of his best tracks that he ever kind of put together. It's parts of the circuit having been compared over the years to similar features at Spa-Francorchamps, Interlagos, and Laguna Seca. The crown jewel of the inner city Istanbul Park, however, remains Turn 8, an incredibly fast, bumpy, multi-apex downhill left-hander that's a proper test of driver's commitment. Our weather for the weekend, possibly some rain. Let's see.
Don't say it, Andy.
Well, I'm just going by what the percentages say. Qualifying
80 degrees and scorching hot and not a cloud in the sky.
Not so much that high of a temperature. It's only supposed to be in the 50s, 58 degrees for qualifying with a 40% chance of rain. And on race day, 59 degrees Fahrenheit with, again, a 40% chance of rain. However, when I looked at that, it said that the rain was probably going to be in the morning. So maybe we have a drying racetrack. That can be interesting as well. So, you know, who knows? But, you know.
Maybe Andy, something I was looking at earlier today when we were kind of prepping for this, going back to 2011 and kind of looking through that season, this race was actually held pretty early on in the season that year. And it's interesting that you mentioned like highs and the not even getting to 60 degrees. So you talk about pretty low temps, a chance of possible rain, which might make it even a little, just a little bit cooler. Even if it doesn't rain, it might just be windy and kind of you know, mixed conditions. And then you have a track that's known for a 5 out of 5 tire stress. This could be a hell of an equation. When you put all that stuff together, tires, this could be like the olden days where tires are lasting 5-6 laps. You know, it could be something insane like that. I don't know. Hopefully it's not like, oh geez, where were we at a few years ago when tires were just blowing left and right?
Oh, that would have been Silverstone, like 17 or 16.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Spot on. I knew my walking F1 encyclopedia and Andy would surely know the answer to that question. Who knows? Hopefully we don't have a situation quite like this, but cold temps and a pretty high stress tire track, that could be a fun, interesting combination on Saturday and Sunday for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely looking like a one stop is probably doubtful. So, you know, we're always rooting for those multi-stop Woo-hoo! Races. So this definitely looks like you have all the ingredients at least put into the mixing bowl. We'll have to see if it bakes. You know, sometimes we have that and it goes pluh, and other times we don't think we have it, and then we end up with, you know, craziness. So be interesting to see how this one pans out. And speaking of the last time we were here, our historical expert, that would be Deanna from the Relapped podcast, was generous enough to give one of her lovely takes on the last time we were here, the 2011 Turkish Grand Prix. Deanna, take it away.
Hi, this is Deanna from Relapped. Welcome back to my segment where I go back and watch an old race from this weekend's track. And this week I watched the 2011 Turkish Grand Prix. Before I get to that, if you like this, I do a similar thing on my podcast, Relapped, but instead of one race, you get the whole season. I'm on the 1979 season right now, but 78 is out, so be sure to check out the podcast on all of your favorite platforms. And you can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Relapped_F1. On to the race. Like I said earlier, I went back and watched the 2011 Turkish Grand Prix, which was the last race held in Istanbul and the first year of this current era of Pirelli tires, which we'll get back to in a bit. This was the fourth round of the 2011 season, and the starting grid looked like this. After destroying his car in FP1 and missing FP2, Vettel took pole for Red Bull, followed by his teammate Mark Webber. Rosberg was in third for Mercedes, Hamilton was in fourth for McLaren, Alonso was in fifth for Ferrari, Button was in sixth for McLaren, Petrov was in seventh for Renault, Michael Schumacher was in eighth for Mercedes, Heidfeld was in ninth for Renault, and Massa was in tenth for Ferrari. It's a sunny day in early May, and we're going for 58 laps around Istanbul Park. Vettel led from pole, Rosberg got past Webber right off the line, and Hamilton tries to make a move on the Red Bull too, but goes out wide and ends up losing out to Alonso and Button, and even Schumacher has a look on him. So when it's all said and done, he goes from fourth to sixth. Further back, Massa gets past Heidfeld for ninth, but is conveniently gifted seventh when Petrov and Schumacher have a very awkward collision. Schumacher should have just given up the place, but instead he ran straight into the rear wheel of the Renault and broke his front wing. Back up front, Webber used DRS to pass Rosberg, and the leading pack is Vettel, Webber, Rosberg, with Alonso right on the back of them. They're followed by the two McLarens, who are pretty much on top of each other. Button's leading Hamilton, and their pit wall is pretty much telling them to chill out. On lap 6, Hamilton manages to get past Button around the outside of turn 12, but Button gets a slipstream and darts on the outside of the pit straight, but unfortunately, that was in vain. Hamilton gets back past him again at turn 1. Then on the next lap, a little further up the track, Alonso is all over the back of Rosberg and gets past him under DRS. And then back to the McLaren battle, Button gets past Hamilton again at turn 1, and this time is able to make it stick. This is largely because Hamilton makes a mistake after that trying to close the gap back to Button, but this now puts Massa on the back of him, and Massa gets past Hamilton with DRS, and right after, they both dive into the pits. Massa was the first one in, but Hamilton was the first one out thanks to McLaren's quick work in the pit stops. Next into the pits was Webber and Alonso, with Webber managing to stay in front, followed right after by Rosberg and Vettel. And the only one staying out of that leading pack was Button, meaning the leading group was Button, ahead of Vettel, Webber, Alonso, Kobayashi, who started last, hasn't pitted yet, has made it all the way up to fifth, followed by Rosberg, Hamilton, and Massa. Button's moment in the sun during this race was short-lived, as Vettel pretty much looked unstoppable, charged him down, took back the lead, and in about a lap, and then Button pitted anyway. Elsewhere, Schumacher was in another little collision with Barrichello while the Renaults were playing bumper cars with each other. So, after the first round of pits, the teams are on the radios to the drivers saying it's looking like Plan B. And as I noted earlier, this was the first year of this current era of Pirelli tires, and they liked to drop off fast. This round of pit stops was only on lap 10 of 58 around that time. So Plan B was a full-on four-stopper. Planned, no weather, no crazy conditions. That was just going to be the standard. And Button was pulling the opposite strategy, trying to go for three, which is pretty insane to what we see now, especially probably not what we're going to see this weekend with them using the hardest compounds of tires, which is annoys me to no end. Anyway, it's Vettel leading Webber, Alonso, and Rosberg in fourth for the moment, but that Mercedes at this point had horrible race pace, especially in a straight line, and gets overtaken under DRS for the third time by Hamilton. Another trifecta happening on the track, Schumacher coming together with another car, this time it's Duresta. Rosberg's race pace is pretty terrible, though coming for him next is Massa. A few laps go by, the Ferrari can't find a way through, but on around lap 20, Massa finally gets past Nico, but crucially, it's right before the DRS detection zone, so Nico's able to get back past under DRS. So then Massa has another lap. This time learns his lesson, takes the pass under DRS. That's time number 4 for Rosberg. But while this is happening, Button appears out of absolutely nowhere and gets the most impressive overtake on Rosberg of the day, going around the outside at turn 14. Now Button is charging down Massa, and a couple laps go by, he closes that gap. Button gets past Massa, and while he's doing that, Massa has a gigantic lockup. Luckily, is able to pit directly after that. Those tires were done for. In the midst of all of this, everybody's going in for the second round of pit stops. Button was the last in, again trying to stretch out that 3-stop, but McLaren not able to produce another good pit stop, and they have an issue with the left rear, cost him a few seconds. So back up front, Vettel is still in the lead. He's ahead of Webber, who has Alonso charging him down while setting fastest lap after fastest lap. In doing so, he's able to close that gap and passes Webber under DRS and is up into second. So the leading group now is Vettel, Alonso, Webber, Hamilton, Petrov, Massa, Button, and Rosberg. Button, who desperately needs to keep life in his tires if he's going to pull off the 3-stop, gets held up by Massa, who is stuck behind Petrov, who needs to pit. Now it's time for round 3 of pit stops. Rosberg was the first in, followed by Hamilton, who had a quick pit stop of just 15.6 seconds, which, you know, really helped his race, followed by Webber was in the pits and Alonso in the pits, not nearly as long. Back on the track, Petrov finally pits and Button manages to get back past Massa, who goes wide into the marbles into turn 8, drops back, and we won't probably really hear anything else about him again today. So back up front, Button pits, Vettel pits, and after the third round of pit stops, it's still Vettel leading Alonso, Webber, Hamilton, Rosberg, and Button. Only thing of note between the third and fourth round of pit stops is Schumacher again comes together with somebody. This time again, it was Barrichello, having a eventful day. All right, for the fourth round of pit stops, it's Rosberg first, followed by Webber, Alonso, Hamilton, and Vettel. There was some talk about maybe him going on to a 3-stop strategy, but he had the pit window back to second, so played it safe. When they all rejoined, it was Vettel leading again, Alonso, Webber, Button, the only holdout that is still trying to pull off that 3-stopper, followed by Hamilton and Rosberg. Unfortunately, though, for Button, it is quickly evident that the 3-stop was not the move. Hamilton gets back past his teammate Button much easier than the first little battle they had earlier on in the race. And then Rosberg gets a nice DRS pass of his own and gets back up into fifth. Back in the podium positions, Webber has closed the gap to Alonso. He overtakes Alonso with the DRS and holds the inside line into the last couple corners. Alonso tries to get back at him on the pit straight, holds on to the back of him into turn 1, tries to get the slipstream on the run into turn 3, but Alonso runs a little wide and that pretty much settles the race. So other than that, there was an interesting little scrap between Schumacher, Alguersuari, and Massa. They went 3 wide into the last corner, which was a fun thing to see. Hopefully we'll see something like that again. Schumacher managed to not make contact this time. He came out on top of the run down to the pit straight, but Massa pushed him out wide and off onto the track into turn 1 in a very impressive battle for 11th. The final results were Vettel took the win, just dominated the entire field, somehow led all but one lap on a 4-stop strategy. His teammate Webber made it a Red Bull 1-2. Alonso was in third for Ferrari, taking the team's first podium of the year. Hamilton was in fourth for McLaren. Rosberg finished fifth for Mercedes. Button finishing where he started in 6th. A lot of work to get back to that same place. Heidfeld was in 7th for Renault. Petrov was in 8th for Renault. Buemi was in 9th for Toro Rosso. And Kobayashi was in 10th for Sauber. He started last on the grid, and at this point, there were 24 grid positions, so impressive drive from him. If it feels like all I talked about today was pit stops, it's because there were 73 of them, which for a completely dry race is quite a bit. A fun fact, the race that holds the record for the most pit stops is later during the 2011 season, which is Hungary, but that was a wet to dry, changeable conditions type race. But for this weekend, sadly, probably not going to get near as many pit stops, with Pirelli going for the hardest compound. I thoroughly enjoyed this race. There may have been an aggressive amount of pit stops, but there were some really decent overtaking, so I have high hopes for this weekend. Although there is a second DRS zone at this year's race versus the one in 2011. So we'll see what effect that has. Again, if you want to check out the podcast, you can find Relapped on all of your favorite podcast platforms. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Relapped_F1. I'll be back next time for Bahrain. And to all the American fans, good luck waking up at an ungodly hour on Sunday for the race.
Thank you very much, Deanna, for that lovely recap. And as always, again, you can always find her stuff at Relapped on Twitter. She's at Deanna Relapped. And so her stuff is great. She's basically taking every season starting with 1978 and doing basically the same thing you just heard, but basically every year of that. So it's a great way to learn F1 history and ways to see that, you know, the parallels between 30, 40 years ago and today. I actually think it's quite interesting. So check it out. With that, meet Three Wishes Cereal, a high protein, low sugar, grain-free breakfast cereal that tastes like the cereals of your childhood, made with modern-day clean ingredients. Three Wishes contains ingredients such as chickpeas, pea protein, and tapioca, a feat of food science that took 2 years of development and comes in four flavors: cocoa, cinnamon, honey, and unsweetened. Three Wishes is a plant-based, gluten-free, certified cereal free from wheat, dairy, soy, oats, corn, rice, and peanuts, with 70% less sugar and as much as 8 times the protein of their decadent counterparts. There's nothing on the shelf quite like it. Right now, Three Wishes is offering our listeners 10% off with code PODCAST10. Head to their website at www.threewishescereal.com to shop and learn more.
Yeah, man, they've got a really great story out there. So, yeah, definitely check them out. It tastes pretty damn good, I got to say. You know, you when you read the ingredients, you may not think it, but, you know, sometimes, occasionally, something healthy actually does taste good. And I would say I definitely put this in the category. And then, you know, if you're looking for all the protein, I think that was a big thing for me that stood out for me. You know, I'm trying to find a way to still enjoy some food, but eat a little bit healthier given all this quarantine fun. So, you know, they're making our lives a little bit easier, putting together some good stuff. So I've had the honey and it was quite delicious. I'm looking forward to picking up a couple more flavors myself. So definitely check them out.
Yeah, it's actually good stuff. You know, you take one look at me and you go, I'm a guy who likes his food. So trust me, if I'm telling you this is good stuff. So go check them out. It's worth it. And it's not that bad for you.
It's a nice change.
Yep. So with that, we're going to now transition into our predictions segment. Our guest predictor this week is Josh Wilson, who you can find on Twitter at WilsonJ194. Thank you very much, Josh, for being willing to do this for us. John, who does Josh have for his qualifying top three, and take you through yours as well?
Yeah, you can find Josh at WilsonJ194 on Twitter. He's definitely contributed a good bit to our show, so we really appreciate him coming on this week to take care of that. So his qualifying top three, he's going semi-chalk, I'd say. A Bottas P1, Hamilton P2, and a Verstappen in P3. Myself, apparently we are on the same wavelength. Josh, I'm also going Bottas, Hamilton, Max for a semi-chalk response. And then James, okay, James is following. Okay, that. Something's a little shady here, because if James is doing it, that just means he copied me. So James is also a Bottas, Hamilton, Max. Andy, please tell me you're mixing this up.
Well, I'm mixing it up, but I'm mixing it up by going pure chalk again. So I'm going to have Hamilton in one, Bottas two, Max Verstappen in three.
Fair enough.
So who do we have for qualifying pole lap times, John?
Yeah, so a quick tidbit on this one, just for reference point, is that going back to 2011, that Deanna just so thankfully and graciously recapped for us. Again, awesome job to her. Shout out to her show. The pole time for that 2011 race was Sebastian Vettel, again in his dominant Red Bull era, and it was a 125.049. And then the fastest lap was a 129 0.703 that his teammate and also, again, the dominant Red Bull, Mark Webber, at the time, managed to get. So we're really just kind of throwing darts at a dartboard here. We assume it's going to be a little faster, but the weather, I don't even know what the weather's going to do this. But Josh is going, I would say, right there, kind of middle of the ground. He's going with a 119.875. So what do we got, like a 5.5-second uptick on there? It sounds a little crazy, but it may not be at all. I'm not quite as brave, but I'm not too far off. I'm going with a 120.111, so 4.5 seconds or so, give or take. James is going balls to the wall. No shocker there. He's going with a 117.411. Andy, I know he was probably using you as a reference point, so we need to start screwing with him on the agenda. We should just put some hell of a crazy time on there, and then he always wants to top it. So next race, just go about 20-30 seconds below the lap record and see what he does. But Andy, what you got in there?
Well, this is totally throwing darts at a dartboard, but I'm thinking heavier cars, wider tires. You know, it's the first time since that 2017 package came in, and we saw lap times basically 4 to 5 seconds a lap faster, and I'm thinking that they've added to it since then. So I basically took the last pole time and basically subtracted 7 seconds, so I'm at 118.221, hoping that it's somewhere in the ballpark, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, I like how you and James are kind of on the extreme side of things, and Josh and I are on the slightly more tame side. Surely, one of us has got to be, at least within the 107% rule. that's kind of our only hope at these.
Well, we got to do better, because the last two, on one circuit we were way too fast, and on the next circuit we were way too slow. So, hopefully by spreading it out a little bit, one of us will be sort of close.
Yeah, right. Well, hopefully it's me. But yeah, hopefully one of the four of us is at least in the ballpark here. Cause the last couple of races have been kind of rough, given no reference points to go off of.
Yeah, exactly. So who do we have for podium?
So Josh is going full on chalk on this one. He's going with a Hamilton, a Bottas, a Verstappen. James is getting crazy here. I like it. He's going with a Max Verstappen in P1. Followed by Lewis Hamilton, P2, and a Charles Leclerc pulling out the podium. And James might have been drinking this week. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I know he's drinking, but I don't know how much. Maybe a little bit more this week than last. Myself, I'm going full-blown chalk as well with a Hamilton, Bottas, Verstappen. Andy, you mixing it up at all?
I wish I could say that, but I'm not. I think Lewis wants to put this title away. He's on great form. I think he takes it with P1. Bottas, a slower but still really competitive P2, and followed by Max Verstappen, trying to challenge Bottas, but not necessarily quite getting there, because that's where they kind of are on pace right now.
Yeah. We shall see.
So our tiebreaker is usually our fastest lap and driver. John, who do you have?
So we're still getting that from Josh, and we'll update this before our race episode. But James has a Max Verstappen at a 119.001. Myself, I'm again referencing my slower qualifying time. I'm going with a Hamilton, going with the clincher, just putting the nail in the coffin to get that last that seventh championship. I'm going with Hamilton at a 121.999. Andy, where are you at?
I'm at a 119.786, and I do think that's going to be set by the hopefully title winner, Lewis Hamilton.
Nice. And then we move on to our bonus picks. So Josh, we have this from him. He has he went with P4, P5, and P6 this week. So I don't know if we've done quite that order yet.
No, we hadn't yet. So I think this is interesting.
Yeah, this is getting a little – we've got some good drivers in this mix here, and definitely more than three drivers that could fall into this category. So he is going with a P4 of Daniel Ricciardo, a P5 with Sergio Perez, and a P6 with Carlos Sainz. I think that's a strong, strong selection there, Josh. James is going with a Pierre Gasly in P4. I mean, you got Leclerc in P3 and Gasly in P4. I think it'd be a fun race if that happened, James. I don't know if it's going to, but it'd be fun to watch. He's got Daniel Ricciardo in P5 and Perez in P6. Myself, I'm going with a Danny Ric in P4, a Charles Leclerc in P5, and a Carlos Sainz in P6. Andy, what you got?
I have Daniel Ricciardo finishing in P4, and I'm trying to think of ways where I can keep my McLaren guys in that hunt for P3, so I'm going to go Carlos Sainz with a P5 and a Lando Norris with P6. Double points for them. Hopefully they pull ahead and get P3 this weekend.
Very nice, very nice. And Andy, looking at the times, it looks like we're going to be drinking a hell of a lot of coffee this weekend.
you either have to do your power napping, or you gotta have some of that Red Bull or 5-Hour Energy or whatever elixir you take to keep up all night.
Rich energy, you know, if you feel inclined. I honestly, Andy, I think you're going to need both this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, these are pretty brutal times. Practice one. On Friday, if you are so inclined to do that live, that is a 2 a.m. Central, 3 a.m. on the East Coast. Practice 2 starts 6 a.m. Central, so it's going to still be dark here during that. Practice 3 will be 3 a.m. Central, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Qualifying, will be 6 a.m., so it's a little bit closer to actual daylight. But the race, if you are like me and you do it live, gonna do it in the dark, 4:10 a.m. Central, 5:10 Eastern, 3:10 Mountain, 2:10 a.m. on the Pacific Coast. If you do it live, God love you for it.
You know we will. There's no question about it. It's just a matter of.
I'm gonna hear that music, and the next thing I know. I mean, I'll be like passed out, and the next thing I know, I'll just be like, you know, in full mode, you know, texting and everything. It'll be great.
You know that scene from all the movies where like someone's making cookies or something, and you know someone smells it in their sleep and wakes up. That's Andy when he hears the F1 music.
Pretty much.
Like, da, 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 da. Yep. And he's just up and going. It's full on game on. Yeah, it's just a matter of do I? I mean, there's no way in my old age of these days that I'm going to stay up till 4 a.m. and try to make it through a race. So I'm going to try to shoot for like a midnight ish sleep time. Get a few hours of power nap, a couple hours in there, wake up, pound down some coffee, and then hopefully maybe get some sleep after the race. I'm going to be probably a pretty crabby person. I'm going to have to get a lot of brownie points with my significant other this week because I'm probably not going to be the most pleasant person on Sunday, but I will be in great spirits hopefully come Sunday night to record with you guys for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that it's going to be an awesome race, that it's worth getting up at, you know, the dawn's early light to go do it. You know, nothing would annoy me more than to have just a crappy, you know, two pass on track type race. But I don't think we're going to have that. I think this is going to be a real fun one. This is another track that I've really been kind of looking forward to when they announced the calendar. So, I think. Yeah, totally worth it to do it live. But if you can't, I'm pretty sure ESPN will have some standard replay times. So check that out if that's how you want to do it. Or you can always check out F1 TV, assuming it works. Usually works pretty good in the replays.
Or, you know, shameless plug, if you can't catch any of those, we have this incredible podcast called the Outlap F1.
We're doing an
incredible in-depth race review that we will be recording late Sunday night. We'll be dropping early Monday morning or you know, basically Monday morning, normal Monday morning time for all of our European listeners. So on your drive to work, you will have, you know, your listening pleasure to help you out with your commute. Or if your commute is like mine these days where I get up and walk 10 feet to the office, you know, in between your conference calls, you know, throw on a podcast and soak it all in like we do. So we appreciate all your support out there. The numbers just continue to grow, spreading into more and more areas of the part of the country and throughout the world, honestly. So credit to all you guys out there. We really appreciate it in telling your friends and spreading the Formula One and the Outlap love out in the world.
Yeah, this has been, you know, for my first year doing it so far, this is awesome. So it's been really fun to bring it to you guys and gals every time. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.